Spirit Radio Podcasts.
On the line for this week's home and lifestyle tips, I have Therese Davy. And a happy Easter to you, Therese.
Happy Easter. We can say hallelujah again, Wendy. And can I say, after that lovely romantic song, can I say happy anniversary to my lovely current husband, who, first time ever we've been able to do this on the radio in 17 years of marriage. Happy anniversary, Anthony.
17 years.
And listen, David, as well. There, happy anniversary to those as well.
And can you remember your first dance at your wedding, Therese?
Yes.
What was
it? It wasn't with my husband.
What was your first dance with your husband when he was your husband? Can you remember the song you danced to?
No.
Oh, dear. What are you doing for your anniversary? Something very romantic, I'm sure.
Yeah, I believe I'm getting afternoon tea delivered to the house.
Very nice.
As a surprise. And that'll be lovely. In the middle of work. But it'll be lovely. I hope we get some sunshine and we can eat out.
Well, after 17 years of marriage, we'll have to get some marriage tips off you one of these days, Therese. But for this week, what did you learn?
Never go out and work in the garden without wearing gloves. I say this every year, but I got a particular cut on my thumb, and you do not realise how important your thumb is for gripping things, for cutting things, for using a scissors, and I can't hold things properly. So never, ever go out in your garden without wearing your gloves to protect your hands, please, everyone. And the second thing I learned last night was, when you're emptying your dryer, just make it a habit. And I think we've talked about this before in the context of fire safety, for empty the fluff, but also empty out the overflow of your water, the condenser, because sometimes it might start spilling before it triggers or beeps and tells you it's full. And like me, I let some clothes fall on the floor into a pool of hidden water. So I was hopping mad last night, but never mind. It's something to do and something to remember when you're using your dryer.
Yeah, make and then you end up walking in your socks in it and having wet socks. Happens to me frequently in our house. Okay, very good. They're the little things that actually make a big difference. Now, you always find interesting uses that are alternative to what we might think of. And this week you're talking about the freezer.
It's been a long while since I looked this one up and found some really interesting and new ones. 6 alternative uses for your freezer. Unsticking envelopes. Have you ever put a sealed up a birthday card and forgot to put in the check, the voucher? Put your envelope into a Ziploc bag, leave it in the freezer for 2 hours, and then your envelope will reopen easily. But let it thaw a wee bit before you reseal it, and they'll never know you forgot to put the thing in the envelope. It's a dead handy tip. The other one is to get rid of odours. Now, this was a whole new one for me. If you have those good shoes that do smell a bit since they were used a while ago, or your best jeans that you don't want to wash that often, put the jeans in a canvas bag or the shoes in a Ziploc bag and leave them overnight in the freezer, and that kills the bacteria that causes the odours. Imagine.
Wow, that's incredible. So just make sure you take the lasagna out of the freezer, make space, and shove your jeans in there instead.
In a canvas bag and the shoes in a Ziploc bag, and maybe put them into a bin bag if you're worried about contaminating anything else, but I thought it was really clever. Are your shoes ever too tight when you buy them new and you need to go out to a wedding and you haven't broken them in? The night before, how about putting a Ziploc bag of water into them, freeze them overnight in the freezer? The ice will expand and very gently stretch your shoes, and they should be okay in the morning.
You say, Therese, that's a tip for new shoes, but it's also a tip for shoes when you're 6 months pregnant and your feet have expanded and you need to widen them a little bit, which is the situation I'm in. Okay, there'll be shoes in the freezer now.
Well, some water in a bag. Did you ever get chewing gum on the end of your shoes or stuck on clothes? Now, this is an old tip and loads of people know this one. You pop them into a bag and freeze them for just 2 hours, and the gum just peels off much easier than having to scrape it off with a knife and using WD-40 and all kinds of things. It's just simple and clean and a handy way to do it. Bugs. The freezer will get rid of your bugs, Wendy.
Okay, tell me more.
Sometimes people buy old-fashioned wooden things in junk shops or charity shops. They're kind of quirky or they're different, and you'll see them in all kinds of interior design magazines. But they also, if you see little holes in them, that means they might have woodworm. Stick them in the freezer. No, not for overnight or 2 hours. This needs a couple of weeks to kill the larvae if you don't want to use chemicals on your new product or on your new toy, gizmo or gadget, whatever it is, put them in the freezer. And likewise, dust mites, and this is one we did speak about before, there's loads of dust mites in your pillows, and put them in a bin bag and freeze them overnight before you wash your pillows, just to get rid of the dust mites. It's a huge allergy. It's an allergy I have, and it's an easy and simple way of doing it. A lot of the weight on your pillow sometimes is pure dust mite.
And it sounds like now, to be honest, Therese, with all these things so far, I feel like I need a separate freezer for things, everything other than food.
No. You empty your freezer for a couple of days. Yeah, that's a good habit to get into as well, running down the contents of your freezer rather than ruining food or having overstaying their welcome. But yeah, you make room for these things. You will, because they're clever and they're original. Makeup, Wendy, did you ever hear of putting, well, I suppose you've heard of putting makeup in the fridge.
Well, the only thing I've ever seen in the fridge makeup-wise is nail varnish. Should I be putting something else in the fridge, in the freezer?
Store your lipstick in the freezer if you don't use it often, and in the fridge if you use it more frequently. And that goes for other kind of natural products too. This lady recommended on the internet, because they might have less preservatives if you use them infrequently. Store them in the freezer. If you use them frequently, keep them in the fridge. Eyebrow pencils sharpen easier and you get a better point on them if you pop them in the freezer for 10 minutes before you sharpen them. So makeup in the freezer, Wendy.
Okay, yes, I'll need to make space for that too.
I think that's enough. I think there's enough things going into the freezer. We move on to my next one, which is my next topic, which is today is National Grilled Cheese Sandwich Day. Did you know that, Wendy?
I didn't, but now I feel I must prepare myself one of these for lunch.
Yeah,
never knew there was such a thing.
Well, there's a national day for everything in America.
Of course, yeah.
And today is national, among other things, National Grilled Cheese Sandwich Day. But I'm saying don't just settle for nice Irish cheese. Put something under it. Put some tomato, put some toast and chutney and ham and cheese and put that under the grill. That is a gorgeous tea supper. Top it up with another slice of toast if you want and serve it with a wee handful of potato.
Yummy. And actually in the States, a lot of the time they do their grilled cheese not on a grill, but they do it on a frying pan. So you could try that.
They do, and they mix sweet and savoury and all kinds of things.
Yeah,
as well.
Wonder Bread. It's kind of like brioche, I think.
Oh, no, we'll just stick with the toast, the chutney, the ham and the cheese.
Keep
under
it
the grill.
Simple.
Yeah, keep it simple and tasty and nutritious and Irish, and you're off with just a wee handful of potato.
Spirit. Today we'll see some of the lockdown restrictions ease, so allowing things like travelling across your county or 20 kilometres if you're going across the border, and of course everybody returning back to school today, with some students having been off school for 4 months, and things like outdoor meetups back on the card. So where are we at in general with the pandemic? How has it been handled, and what about the path forward? Well, on the line to give us his thoughts and indeed his advice, we have Professor Jack Lambert from the UCD School of Medicine. Professor Lambert, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, good morning.
So first things first, I guess, is that what a lot of people will, they'll be happy that restrictions are lifting, but have that awful feeling in the pit of their stomach as well. What if cases go up? Are we going to end up in lockdown again? I think we're exiting some of the restrictions from one of the longest periods of lockdown we've had. I think we've had one of the longest lockdowns in Europe. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think the numbers, if you look at the numbers over the last couple of weeks, the numbers are not down to the level that back in the springtime the government said we had to get to. You know, we had to get to less than 25 per 100,000, you know, or get down to less than 100 in the community. We've not been able to do that, but we have been able to get it down from, you know, from, you know, 8,000 or 6,000 maximum in the peak this winter to in between 300 and 600 a day. So lockdown has worked, and people have done well, you know, in terms of, you know, a lot of the COVID prevention strategies that people know work, you know, the mitigation strategies. But the risk, obviously, is when you open up again, you know, there's going to be more people in circulation, there's going to be more people in close contact, both respiratory spread and contact spread. And if the numbers start going up again, what is the government going to do? That, are we going to live with COVID? Are we going to use lockdown as our only strategy for increasing numbers? That's really the question, I think.
And I think when you kind of put it that way, Professor Lambert, that's the thing that kind of scares people, just in terms of, oh my goodness, we can't go back into another lockdown again for all sorts of reasons, whether it's economic reasons, mental health, the impact on health services overall, screenings, like the list goes on and on. Do you think now at this stage almost year on that the government has come up with a good living with the virus strategy, especially considering the vaccine rollout?
Well, I'm not sure, to be perfectly honest. You know, that's really the issue, is that I think we need to get communication from the Public Health Emergency Group and from the government. What are the contingency plans? If you look at the numbers over the last couple of weeks, like I said, there's still 6,900 cases over 2 weeks. The numbers in hospitalized and ICU beds are way down, and it's primarily affecting younger people now. So 75% people less than 44, 27% less than 18 years of age. And I suspect that the numbers are going to go up in kids again as they go back into school and as we go back into circulation. But the good news is healthcare workers, it's way down. It used to be 13% of the cases were healthcare workers. It's less than 2%. That kind of says the vaccine's working. Less cases in the elderly. So the vaccine's working, but we can't hold our breath waiting for the vaccine rollout. It's been so slow. I think we have to find a well, you know, thought out plan for living with COVID, and maybe not just use numbers, but also use, you know, other considerations. We have to live safely with COVID, and the government has a responsibility to come up with that kind of a plan. We have a different plan from the rest of the world, I would say, in terms of our lockdown strategy.
How is it different, Professor Lambert?
Well, it's just in terms of the duration.
Yeah.
I mean, look, the UK have numbers equivalent of Ireland right now, right? I mean, we've got 400 cases in a population of 5 million. The UK are kind of reporting 4,000 cases in a population of 50 million, same ratio. And they're opening up pubs in UK, outdoors, and we're saying, go back to school in 3 weeks, we'll look and see what's happening with the numbers, and we'll consider other things. Italy has opened up all of their, you know, outdoor construction for months and months and months. We've decided to keep it closed down when there was very few cases of outbreaks in outdoor construction. So, you know, and the consequences, the costs of lost income, to the economy, from that kind of a strategy is huge. If there's justification for it, if there's lots of outbreaks in the building sites, then that's a consideration. But we actually have to really have, you know, transparent communication about the rationale for why we're making the decisions we're made, and if the numbers do increase, you know, what plans we have. I would support, you know, increasing mitigation strategies, more religiously using masks, more religiously using hand washing, and really pushing that. I know people are burned out and tired, but we have to do even better now, because last year the virus was a different virus. This virus is much more infectious than the first wave, and contagious not just in respiratory but also from contact. So we need to do a better job of masks and hand washing at every level as we open up.
And you've talked a lot, Professor Lambert, just about numbers, and it's interesting, obviously you mentioned construction there, and I know from looking at the case numbers I've seen, I think the construction industry, when it was open, accounted for 0.09% of cases. So you can understand frustration across different industries where they're doing a lot of mass testing and things like that. But are we focusing on the right numbers in terms of obviously, every day we hear the number of cases, and you mentioned, you know, there's an increase in younger people who we know mightn't, you know, have a severe consequence as someone in their 80s. But we're doing more testing. We've got these pop-up centres, and it's much easier to get a test from your GP. So should we just be focusing on, you know, ICU and hospital admissions, or what are the numbers we should focus our concern on?
I think, yes, ICU numbers, hospital admissions, you know, elderly being infected, you know, elderly getting sick and getting deaths, people with comorbidities getting sick and ended up in the hospital. So, yeah, I think we actually have to, it's a balancing act. You don't want to let things get out of control like they did in December. You know, in December, I would say that the reason we didn't let our guard down, we didn't know just how infectious this new virus was. We allowed some opening up of, you know, of restaurants and gyms and this and that. And I think that, you know, we had a surge. We don't want another surge. So this is a very unpredictable, you know, virus, a very infectious virus, and we don't know much about it. And it's changing all the time. So it's challenging the best scientists in the world. We need to actually come up with answers, and we need to come up with quick answers. Everything we do, I think, seems to be, public health, you know, emergency group asks the NIAC, the vaccine group, or they ask the expert advisory group, and then they write a report, and then it comes back, and then they put it together and present it to the politicians. There's a huge lag time in decision making in Ireland, is one of my observations, and I think we need to rethink our whole structure and organization. We need to act fast. We need to get the best people at the table together every day making decisions. And I think that really will help us moving forward in terms of living safely with COVID, with the best scientific evidence, you know, on a daily basis being given to the public health emergency group and to our, you know, elected government officials.
And you think at the moment that's not happening in a kind of real-time manner as efficiently as it should be?
No, it isn't, is my understanding. My colleagues who are involved in these groups basically say that they're not directly involved in the day-to-day basis. If there's a question that the government or the public health emergency group thinks they have, they send a communication to these groups. They put together a response, send it back to them. It's reviewed by them. It's not a finely developed process. I think, you know, that it's been said by, you know, Michael Ryan that, you know, you need to act quick. You need to make decisions quick. We haven't made decisions quick. Even going back to the masks, you know, back in last springtime, we didn't enact masks on buses till the, you know, 11th of August, I recall, and Slovenia had it done in March. So, yes, we've been delayed at every level, I think, along the way. This is a really tricky virus. We need the best experts, you know, to put their heads together. We've got some really good experts, you know, within the government, within the HSC and Department of Health. But we need all hands on board to come up with the right decisions and make those decisions quickly.
So that's the kind of decisions, Professor Lambert, at kind of government level and all these various groups you're mentioning. But just for individuals who are listening, what would your advice be to them just approaching the coming weeks with the fact that there has been some changes in restrictions? People who say, thank God, I feel like I've a bit more freedom, but you know what? I don't want to go back to another lockdown.
Yeah, I would just up the ante. Everybody's letting their guard down. I work in a hospital, and I see staff around the hospital not being as meticulous about, you know, washing their hands when they go in and out of places. So I would just, and even when I go to the community right now, before we're out of lockdown, you know, I go to the grocery stores and kind of roll my eyes sometimes, and the lack of detail to, you know, COVID mitigation that occurs in some of the stores, the lack of, you know, supervision by guards, the delivery guys walking in and out of these buildings without masks on. I mean, I'm just seeing these kind of things. So we're not doing it right. I think the advice really simply is, you know, let's make this work. The way you make it work is you wear a mask religiously, you do the social distancing, you wash your hands every time you touch a surface, because this is how this virus is transmitted. If you're dropping your kids off to school, make sure they're all got masks, you know, when you're driving them in. If you're meeting them afterwards, make sure you're wearing your mask when you're having coffee, and really encourage your kids not just to wear masks when they're in class. You know, that we're going to have to continue to, you know, do this education, because right now we've only vaccinated a small percentage. There are results in healthcare workers, there are results in the elderly, but the virus is going to continue to transmit if we don't up the ante in terms of COVID mitigation. So we all have a responsibility to do that. I think Irish citizens do.
Spirit. So for those of you who have been working at home for more than a year now, maybe you had, you know, a really fancy ergonomic chair that you had in work, and you've been sitting at a kitchen table, a dining room table, or maybe you had a standing desk and you don't have that anymore at home, or even just getting up and moving to chat to someone at a desk across the room, things that you were doing that were good for your back, or you've fallen out of bad habits, maybe even working on the couch with a laptop on your lap, or as I have done many an evening, writing articles working from my bed. Of course this is going to have an impact on our neck or back and all that sort of stuff. So what can we actually do ourselves when we're at home and we don't have a standing desk, or we can't do some of the things that we did in our offices? On the line to give us the do's and don'ts in looking after our backs to prevent injury, we have Peter Mulryan, who's chartered physiotherapist at Adelaide Physio in Dublin. Peter, thanks for joining us.
No problem, Wendy. Thanks for having me on.
So have you found now through your own work, Peter, that you're getting more people getting in touch who are having issues with their back and neck because of working from home and not looking after themselves as well?
Yeah, definitely. There's been a huge spike in people coming in with neck and back pain. The other side of it as well is people coming in with running injuries because they've decided the gyms are closed, what else can I do? So they take up running. But yeah, people's posture and stuff at home is really taking a hit. As you said there in the intro, working from your bed, working from your couch on laptops as opposed to not having screens, has really taken a toll on people over the last 12 months. Yeah, in the early days, I think people just kind of put up with it, said, be grand, I'll get moving. And we were very blessed in one sense that the first lockdown was in the summer, so people were happy to get outside more. But then when we kicked into winter, you know, it was miserable and cold outside. People were less reluctant to go outside. The knock-on effect is that they just started seizing up and getting back and neck pain, shoulder pain, headaches. And with no access to gyms and everything like that, the routines are shot. So they kind of live with it for as long as they can until they eventually go, right, I've got to go see someone about this to make sure there's nothing more serious happening, which is another side. People get worried then, and the stress will bring more tension through the upper back.
And is that a big problem, Peter, you know, where you have a niggle, you know you're not right, and probably now more than ever, people put off going to see a physio or kind of getting it checked out?
Yeah, like that has been big. There's a big knock-off. Myself personally, I share a clinic with my brother and my father, so we invested in an air purification system. But an awful lot of places didn't do that. And with that, patients did. The fear of going into a closed environment where there's a passing body of people every day has certainly stopped people from coming in seeking advice. Now, you do have telehealth and stuff like that provided, which has been very successful. But sometimes, you know, stretching will only get you so far. Getting hands-on treatment is much better for you.
What about the kind of day-in, day-out stuff, Peter, where, as I mentioned earlier, that people that may, for example, have had a standing desk or, a better chair in their office, things that would have helped their back and neck that are kind of gone, what are the things that we can practically do to say, okay, I'm going to try and look after myself as best I can?
Yeah, God, it's a hard one to answer in one sense because everyone's setup is different. Like, I have patients who have fold-out tables and chairs that they put out in their bedroom every day because they've nowhere else to work. So that situation is just terrific in the sense of the level's all going to be wrong. But if you can, you know, at the kitchen table, or the old phone books are gone, but any kind of books to raise your screen up. So ideally, you want the top of your screen, be it a laptop or a monitor, to be level with your eyes. And then a wireless keyboard and a wireless mouse would be a godsend for an awful lot of people, because if you have to raise your laptop up, it'd be very awkward typing, etc. Then get out and do some movement. You are losing, a lot of people have lost their routine through this, you know, people's commute to work where they had an hour to listen to podcasts or read a book or just stare at the window and look at the world go by, you know, that's all gone. For an awful lot of people, unfortunately. And the Guardian did a survey a long time ago in the early pandemic, and people were up 2 hours a day working, they found, through the UK, USA, and Canada, for example. And
so we're sitting more than we were before.
Exactly. And the Irish Times reported an article where LinkedIn did a survey where people were working 38 hours extra per month. That's over an extra week's work per month sitting there at your computer. So if you knock that back and think of all the activity and time out, socializing, even socializing and walking, that gets you moving. Sitting at your desk for an extra week per month doesn't. So we have to be better, to be stricter on our routine at home, to not say, oh, I'll just send this last email before I go. We have to get up and move and do our stretch. Now, there was a great video on YouTube called The Full Speech, and it was about a doctor talking about the connective tissue in the body and how it seizes up through the stages of rigor mortis. But he was talking not in death, in life, where the more sedentary we become, the more rigor mortis type constriction we get in the body. And he made a very valid example of animals, our pets, cats and dogs. You know, the first thing they do after they've been sitting for a long time or sleeping is get up and have a big stretch, and then they get on about their business. Whereas we don't, as humans, we push it to the last second and then, okay, I've really got to run now, or I've got to get this call, or, you know, people miss out. I have patients who say they don't leave their desk all day long. They, you know, barely go to the bathroom. You know, the thought of going out and getting a coffee or that little 5-minute walk sometimes is alien to them.
And how often should we be getting up and moving? You know, if you're going to, I don't know, set a little alarm on your phone, or if you've got one of those, you know, fitness trackers to kind of buzz to remind you, how often should we be getting up and even moving for a few minutes?
I would say every half an hour. You know, even go downstairs, just have a little bit of mobility. Just walk around. Even that's going to be beneficial to you. Don't walk away with your phone in your hand, so you're looking at that. Just leave it all at the desk and walk away. Every half an hour is a big ask for a lot of people. If you're on a call, for example, that's a good time where you can put the headphones on and you can move around the room if you don't have to be at your screen. And that way you'll get moving. But ideally, yeah, every half an hour or so, get up and have a stretch. You know, in going back to offices, they used to have, and I've gone back to having the big printers at the end of offices, because they found when they brought the personal ones by desk, people weren't moving anymore. So we even lost that, getting up and getting the printing from the printer. It's just very important to get up as often as you can, really. But I know and I understand that the pressures of work just don't allow that a lot of the time for people. So even if you can block it into your calendar, you know, instead of having a meeting blocked in, put in personal time where I need this to get up and...
Yeah, and to actually move around. What about things like, you know, being advised to sit on a Pilates ball to kind of get your body moving while you're sitting? Or is there other things we should be sitting on? And what difference does it make, the opposite of sitting, if you do have a standing desk at home?
Yeah, like sitting on the Pilates ball and stuff are very good. They give you a nice little bit of activity. And as your hips move, it's more flexible through the system. So you are getting and engaging your muscles in that sense. The fixed stand desks are great because you get the best of both worlds, but they are very expensive, and a lot of companies just don't have the capital to buy all their employees a fixed stand desk, and then an employee is not going to put the money out of their pocket either. So working at a kitchen counter or something like that where you can stand at the island and then, as I was saying, stack your computer on books or something to get it up higher is one thing you can do. The ergonomic chairs, you know, if you look at your home setup, you've got to think of what you had in work. You know, if you had two monitors in work, you need two monitors at home. And I've heard of an awful lot of people who, when they went in to grab their stuff, only grabbed one of the monitors. So then they're stuck in a situation that they're not used to working in. And that creates more stress because they don't have the visual scope that they would ordinarily have. I guess the home setup is kind of funny because it's limited by everyone. Everyone's limited by what they have. You know, I have one patient who's living in a bedsit, and she does work on her bed all day, every day, and that's just not good. But she's stuck in a rut because how does she get out of that?
And maybe it's at the stage, Peter, I don't know what experience you've had with clients, but where depending on who your employer is, I know some friends have told me their employers have actually, you know, they've been able to get their fancy chair from work, or they've given them the funding towards a standing desk if they have a case that shows I need it, you know, a physio saying this person needs it. So are we asking for enough from our employers?
I don't think we are. From the people I'm meeting, I don't know if we are. Employers are getting away. Like, they're saving money on running costs of buildings and food and kitchens and canteen, you know, all that kind of the extra perks that they have in the office. Those companies are definitely saving the money on that. So they should be diverting that money into home setups and helping their staff be better and be more comfortable so that there's no long-standing issues. But we're not. I think... I don't know if it's an Irish thing. We just don't ask. We don't put our hand up and say, I need this now. And if you do make noise, I have plenty of patients who have asked and have received what they wanted. But it also goes back to, do I have the room for a sit-stand desk and an ergonomic chair? Because they are big pieces of furniture, and an awful lot of people don't. So employers, you know, there's some really good employers out there, don't get me wrong, who are doing exercise classes and mobility classes, and their staff can sign up to them. And that's working really well for them. But not everyone can provide that because the size of the firm will depict or dictate what they can do.
And what do you do, Peter, for example? I know my husband, who's had serious back issues, you know, his physio's advice was swimming was the best thing. But of course, pools have been closed for a long time. What are the alternatives to things like swimming? You mentioned earlier that sometimes people go out kind of road running, that can be hard on your back. What's the best exercise for someone who has a back issue to just make sure they're moving but not actually putting themselves at risk?
Cycling would be very good in that sense. you know, even road cycling is for sure fine. And if you were in a position where you were able to buy a bike for home, that would be great. But then with a bad back, a lot of it comes down to muscle tightness and muscle function and how the muscles are recruiting. So mobility can be really, really beneficial, like yoga. There's so many apps and programs and people even offering free yoga classes online that you can just log on and do a good stretching session. So like your connective tissue really enjoys and likes long, long hold stretches. So by doing the likes of yoga at home, you would get huge relief through the tension of your back. Because if you ask the majority of the population how long they hold a stretch for, if they even do them at all, they'd say 10, 15 seconds. And really, you need to be doing them for 30, 40 seconds minimum before you get a good benefit from the connective tissue. So from a home, going back to your question, what can you do at home? You're very limited because, again, room, cost of equipment and stuff like that. But there's so many, I would say, online free, access to free yoga, Pilates classes, even though so many gym instructors doing their online classes, like the Joe Wickstove in the UK, which works really well for a huge percentage of the population.
I found Joe pretty good as well, but I suppose would the advice be, Peter, if you have specific issues, you probably need, even if it's on Zoom, you know, one-to-one kind of care to start off with to make sure that you're not doing the moves wrong or using weights that are too heavy or whatever the case may be.
Definitely. If you have any issues like that, the best thing is to book on for telehealth. And the insurance companies have been great. They've endorsed telehealth and they're covering the sessions and even providing their own through the members. But yeah, for someone to have a look at what you're doing and how you're moving, it would be very beneficial. The likes, we've mentioned Joe, it's, you know, I found he wasn't doing a big enough warm-up for people. And then people are trying to keep up with his fitness level, even though they may not be anywhere near it. And there was injuries coming from that as well.
Yes, so you have to be careful who you're watching and all that sort of stuff. Great advice,
exactly.
Peter. Thanks so much for joining us on the programme today. That is Chartered Physiotherapist at Adelaide Physio in Dublin, Peter Mulryan. If you want to find out more about his work, you can go to adelaidephysio.ie.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.